Honorable Ranto, who won't be able to join us today as she's attending at last. The National Assembly rules empower the Portfolio Committee to elect an acting chairperson in the absence of a chairperson and an acting chairperson. So I'm going to facilitate the election of an acting chairperson. I'm going to note nominations and then seconders and any objections to that nomination and any other nomination in that order. May I recognize any nomination? Honorable Nobanda.
Thank you, sir. I nominate Honorable Gungubel.
Any seconder? It's seconded by Honorable Luyenge and Honorable Mazone. Yeah. Any other nomination? There's no other nomination. Honorable Gungubele, may you please proceed to the chair and chair the proceedings for today. Thank you.
Good morning, honorable members. I must express my gratitude to the honor of being allowed to chair such a special session in Parliament. It's the first time in my life that I chair a portfolio committee in the National Parliament. And I'm very grateful. However, we will need to move with focus, with incisiveness, so that we don't spend an unnecessary time here. I want to assume that members have got the agenda that deals with the opening and welcome. Apologies, briefing by the Auditor General, discussions of that report, and later a briefing by the Department of Public Enterprise on the annual report, discussions and later closure. And we table the agenda before the committee to check if the members want to add or anything. Honorable Yangan,
Thank you, new chairperson. I move that we deal with the agenda of today as it is contained in this day. Thank you.
Any second? Honorable Mabanda. To the machine.
Thank you, Chairperson. I'm sorry. I second.
Thank you very much. Then if we proceed in that fashion, it is at that point I want to call upon, without wasting your time, I want to call upon the AG to take us through. I'm sure all of us are aware that the purpose of the AG report is to enable our oversight, our governance, responsibility, and our accountability, and to ensure we deal with issues of accountability. It becomes an arming presentation as we go to the annual report. And I hope it's a kind of a presentation to which we are going to pay our total attention. AG?
Thank you, Honorable Chair, and good morning to the members and the Chairperson. Honorable Chair, as you have outlined, we are presenting the 16-17 audit outcomes for the DPE portfolio. We are covering the department and the six entities underneath the department, being Eskom, Transnet, Danel, Alex Corp, Safcol, and SA Express. Two of those entities are audited by us as the AG, and four are audited by SNG. Let me then proceed to introduce the members of our team who will be fielding
presentations. Sorry, Mr. Adam. You say two audited by?
By the HESA and four by Citizens Zaluba Board.
Which are audited by Zaluba?
Four.
And then you audited? But all are going to be presented by you.
That's it, Chair. But okay. SA Express doesn't have the results yet. Their audit is late, but we'll cover this in the presentation as yet.
Sorry. Honorable Gordon?
No point in sending us two and four. Please tell us which one.
All right. Thank you. Thank you, Chair. So the two that we audit is SA Express and SAFCO. The four that are audited by Citizens Zaluba Kobodo is Eskom, it's Transnet, it's Danel, and Alex Corp. Yes.
Thank you. Proceed, ma'am.
Thank you. So, Chair, I've got a team here. Next to me is Novlen Subramoni. He is a manager in our office. Behind him is Chamunwe Nesamari. She's a manager in our office as well. And next to her is Fezega Baliso. She's from our office as well as the AG. And to their left is a colleague from Sizwe Zaluba Kobodo. We've got Mr. Aaron Timunye. He is the head of assurance at Sizwe Zaluba Kobodo. And next to him is Rudolf Mbanjwa, a manager at SNG as well. We will cover the presentation ourselves, Chair, but we've got the colleagues there. Should there be further questions, especially around the four entities that they audit directly themselves. Thanks, Chair. I think Novlin will take us through the presentation now. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. We move to to slide two, our reputation promise. The Auditor General of South Africa has a constitutional mandate, and as a supreme audit institution of South Africa, we exist to strengthen our country's democracy by enabling oversight, accountability, and governance in the public sector through auditing, and thereby building public confidence. Okay. The role of the AGSA in the reporting process. Our role as the AGSA is to reflect on the audit work performed, to assist the portfolio committee in its oversight role of assessing the performance of the entities, taking into consideration the objective of the committee to produce a budgetary review and recommendation report. The National Development Plan, as well as the Medium-Term Strategic Framework, the MTSF. Okay, these are the 17 UNESCO goals, and in most cases, the National Development Plan is closely aligned to these Sustainable Development Goals. Okay. The next slide is on accountability. So accountability is equal to a plan where we do, where we check, and where we act. Okay. So this is just a diagram of the accountability model. So under a plan, we normally define what's the target. Under do, we look at the internal controls and supervision. as well as the implementation of the basics to get that plan on par. And then under check, there's monitoring by all of the assurance providers. So your assurance providers, you've got your three levels. So first level, you've got in the entities throughout, you've got management, senior management, you've got your executive authority. And then under your second level, you've got internal audit and the audit committees. And then the third assurance level, we've got the portfolio committees. Okay? Under consequences, there's a handbook on accountability. And then if we follow all of these plans, our outcomes, we should have better audit results throughout the public sector, and this will have an impact of having or providing a better life for the citizens of South Africa. Okay. The AGSA's Public Audit Act, what our promise and focus. Okay. Our annual audits, we examine three areas in our annual audits. So the first area is we look at fair presentation of the financial statements, as well as if the absence of significant misstatements in financial statements. The second area, we look at the reliability of the performance information that's reported. And the third area, we look at compliance with your laws and regulations affecting your financial matters for an entity. Okay? The AGSA expresses the following different audit opinions. Okay, there's five columns over here. And in our portfolio for the public enterprises, we're concerned with the first three. So the first one is an unqualified opinion with no findings. So this is a clean audit, and it's the best audit opinion an entity can get and should ascribe to. So under this audit opinion, there's credible and reliable financial statements that are free of material misstatements. And then your performance information is useful and reliable, and then the entity has complied with the key legislation. Okay? The second type of opinion we get is a financially unqualified opinion with findings. So here, you do have credible and reliable financial statements that are free of material misstatements. And then normally over here, if there is any misstatement, it was corrected. Okay, and then under your performance information, you can have useful and reliability findings. And then the last one, under compliance, you can have some findings. Okay, so the third audit opinion is a qualified opinion. So under this opinion, there is material misstatements on specific areas in the financial statements which could not be corrected before the finalization of the audit report or were not corrected. Okay, your next two opinions, an adverse opinion and disclaimed opinion. Luckily for us in the public enterprises portfolio, we don't have these audit opinions. However, for an adverse opinion, there's misstatements of such a significant nature that you couldn't agree with management. And then for disclaimed opinion, if there's outstanding information, for example, it's so material that it actually affects that you can't actually conclude on the audit. The Department of Public Enterprises portfolio, okay, as my colleague Zalisa has mentioned, there's seven entities over here. So we've got the Department of Public Enterprises, okay, and then underneath we've got SEFCO and SA Express, which is audited by the AGSA. And then we've got the four Schedule 4-3 entities, ESCOM, Transnet, Danel, and Alexco, that's audited on our behalf. Okay, the content page. Okay, so we will basically be looking at the audit outcomes of the portfolio over the 4 years, as well as the movement in the audit outcomes. And then we're going to split this between the audits conducted by the AGSA as well as the audits conducted by SNG. And lastly, we look at the status of key commitments by the Minister of Public Enterprises. Okay. The percentages in this presentation is based on the completed audits of 7 auditees, unless indicated otherwise. Okay, and then the overall audit outcomes are indicated as follows. A green block will be unqualified with no findings. A yellow block will be unqualified with findings. Purple block will be qualified with findings. Okay. The audit outcomes comparisons for the portfolio. Okay. So if we look at the slides, we've got a 4-year comparison. So you'll see for the 2016-17 year, the green block is the Department of Public Enterprises, so it's an unqualified opinion with no findings. Then if we look at the yellow block, it's unqualified with findings. We've got the LAC score, we've got Danel, and we've got Transnet. Okay, and then these are the findings. So there will be findings relating to predetermined objectives as well as compliance with laws and regulations. Okay, our purple block is our qualified audit opinion. So we've got a qualified audit opinion for ESCOM and SEFCO, and I'll touch on the qualification areas as we progress. And then lastly, the blue block is SA Express. Okay, that's our audit that's outstanding currently as we speak. So you'll see from 2013 to 14 up until 2015-16, you would notice that Fennell was financially unqualified with no findings, as well as DPE in 13-14. So 14-15, we've got Donnell that's unqualified with no findings. 15-16, it's Donnell. And then 16-17, it's DPE. And then in the very last block, from 13-14 up until 2015-16, we've got SA Express that was a qualified audit opinion. Okay, the movements in the quality of financial statements, annual performance reports, and compliance. Okay, so in terms of the audit of financial statements, we've got, in the 2016-17 year, we've got four audits that's unqualified. Okay, and then we've got two audits that's qualified. The two audits that's qualified, as touched on, is ESCOM and SEFCO. And then the last block, SA Express, is still outstanding. Okay. And then on the findings on the annual performance reports for the 2016-17 year, you've got two audits that have no findings in terms of predetermined objectives. So that's your DPE and Donnell. And then we've got on the last block, SA Express is still outstanding. So that's also in terms of findings of compliance with key legislation. And then you've got four audits that has findings. Okay. And if we look at the last column, findings on compliance with legislation, so DPE has no findings, SA Express is still outstanding, and then we've got five entities with findings. Okay. This is our movement table. Okay. So in this table, you will notice in the second column for an improvement, we've got DPE, which moved from the prior year from an unqualified with findings to an unqualified with no findings. We look at the second block, unchanged for the year. We've got unqualified with findings. Transnet and Alexco has the same opinions as the prior year. And then if we look at the third block, regressed, unqualified with findings, we've got Donnell. And then, okay, so Donnell moved down from unqualified with no findings in the prior year to unqualified with findings in the current year. And then we've got qualified with findings, we've got ESCOM and SEFCO, which regressed from the prior year. And then the outstanding audit is SA Express. Okay. The status of the audit that was outstanding on 31st August 2017, so SA Express was outstanding. The reasons for the audit still being outstanding are as follows. There was a late submission of financial statements. The actual submission date was 4th of July 2017. Whereas the date should have been 31 May 2017. The full asset register was not provided to auditors timely. The complete asset register was only received on the 31st of August 2017. The going concern assessment approved by the board was only provided on the 18th of August 2017. This is quite important to finalize the audit. And then the final listing of irregular expenditure is still outstanding to date from the entity as at 2nd of October 2017. The 2016-17 audit outcomes and key messages, okay, for the AGSA audits. So we audited the Department of Public Enterprises as well as SEFCO. Okay, and then the audit outcome for 2016-17 as compared to 2015-16. So if we look at it, so for DPE, was unqualified for financial statements. There was no material findings for 2016-17, as well as your compliance with laws and regulations. There was no material findings. And it's an improvement because in terms of the 2015-16 audit, we had material findings for compliance with laws and regulations. Okay. SEFCO for financial statements, it's qualified. Okay, and then it's a regression from the prior year, which was unqualified. Under predetermined objectives, we've had material findings relating to usefulness and reliability of the performance information reported. And then in terms of compliance with laws and regulations, we have material findings. Okay? And then, yes, and then the regression for CEFCO for in terms of compliance with laws and regulations, it's mainly due to inadequate SM processes and lack of controls for the prevention and detection of irregular expenditure. And the entity was not able to provide the auditors with adequate audit evidence to support the completeness of irregular expenditure disclosure in the financial statement, and therefore the irregular expenditure disclosure note was not complete, and this has led to the qualification in terms of the financial statement. Okay. The predetermined objectives for the Department of Public Enterprises, there was three programs reported on. We did not look at the administration program. However, for the two programs that we did look at, for the legal and governance, as well as the portfolio management and strategic partnerships, there was no material misstatement in terms of what was reported, and there was no material findings as well. So this is consistent with the prior year as well, so it's a consistent opinion and position. Okay. The predetermined objectives for CEFCO, okay, there was four objectives. We looked at three. So we looked at the financial and commercial sustainability. And here there was material misstatements that was corrected and made in the annual performance report. Okay, then there was no material findings relating to the usefulness and reliability of the performance information. And then the movement from the prior year, this objective was not selected for audit in the prior year. So it was the first time we audited in the current year, 16-17 year. Okay. Then the second objective was sustainable forest management and expansion. There was no material misstatements and there was no material findings for usefulness and reliability of information, and this is consistent with the prior audit as well. And then the last objective was the socio-economic transformation. There was no material misstatements. There was no material findings relating to usefulness of information presented. And then there was material findings relating to reliability of information. So in this instance, there was a few indicators for which we could not get sufficient appropriate audit evidence to conclude on the validity of information. So, and if you compare it to the prior year, it's a regression. Okay. The root causes, okay, relating to CEFCO, is two main areas that relate to the regression and audit outcomes. So the first one is a slow response to improving key controls and addressing risk areas. And then the second one is the instability of vacancies in key positions. So we said management, accounting, which consists of accounting authorities and senior management, the political leadership, executive authorities, do not respond with the required urgency to our messages about addressing risk and improving internal controls. And then secondly, we said the instability and prolonged vacancies in key positions can cause a competency gap and affect the rate of improvement in audit outcomes if officials would deliberately or negligently ignore the duties and contravene legislation and not held accountable for the actions. Such behavior can be seen as acceptable and tolerated. Okay. And then there's no root causes for the Department of Public Enterprises as they are clean. Terms of the audit opinion. Okay. The status of the drivers of internal controls. So as part of internal controls, we look at three areas. We look at the leadership of the entities. We look at the financial performance management as well as the governance structures. So under the Department of Public Enterprises, we're quite happy there as the department was able to improve and obtain a clean audit outcome. However, on the self-call side, you'll see self-call's performance had significant regression overall. Misstatements were identified in financial statements, and there's a great concern on the record-keeping ability of CEFCO, its ability to prepare accurate and complete financial performance information, and adequately monitor compliance with legislation. Okay. The next slide is talking to the irregular expenditure over 3 years. So you'll see from the 2014-15 year, to the 15-16 year, there was a slight decrease in irregular expenditure. However, in the 2016-17 year, it went up by quite a bit. And then you'll see identified by the entity was 216 million. Identified by the auditors was 56.4 million, with a total of 272.4 million. Okay, and then the nature. Most of these occurrences are caused by non-compliance with SEM legislation. The main areas of non-compliance within SEM that cause irregular expenditure is one, procurement without competitive bidding or quotation processes, non-compliance with procurement process requirements, and then non-compliance with legislation on contract management. So all of the irregular expenditure identified for the Department of Public Enterprises related to prior matters that had the investigation concluded in the current year. And then there was a significant regression in performance of SAFCO in relation to SEM as the entity lacked adequate processes for the identification and detection of irregular expenditure throughout the financial year. And then the amount included in the 2016-17 for SAFCO was regarded to be incomplete as the auditors could not obtain evidence, obtain reliance on the completeness of the irregular schedules provided by management, and this has resulted in the qualification to the financial statements for the irregular expenditure disclosure note. Okay. Recommendations for improving SEM findings. So we should have a less tolerant approach by all parties, including those charged with governance and oversight, which will result in accountability and consequences being enforced against those who intentionally fail to comply with legislation. We should strengthen our SEM control environment. For example, if there are vacancies or skills gaps in terms of SEM environment, we should fill and close those gaps by appointing suitably qualified personnel. And then we should implement supply chain management compliance checklists to supplement policies and procedures that already exist in the environment. And then we should submit regular reports to management and governance structures on compliance with key legislation. This will assist. And then corrective or disciplinary action for misconduct. And then lastly, focus on preventing irregular expenditure and non-compliance. This should be a key performance measure in senior officials' contracts. Okay. And then in terms of the compliance with laws and regulations for SAFCO, I've touched already on the irregular expenditure and the procurement and contract management. However, in our audit of compliance, there is other areas that we look at. So, for example, we look at annual financial statements, performance and annual reports. So if there was material misstatements, for example, and these were corrected, it will result in a finding of non-compliance. So in the first instance, we said material misstatements of irregular expenditure and related parties in the consolidated and separate financial statements identified by auditors were corrected and the supporting records were provided subsequently. And then further, material misstatements of the cash flow statement of the separate financial statement and material misstatements of biological assets, property, plant, equipment, cost of sales, fair value adjustments, operating expenditure and commitments in the consolidated financial statements identified by the auditors were corrected and the supporting records were provided subsequently. But the uncorrected material misstatements resulted in the consolidated and separate financial statements receiving a qualified audit opinion. Then in terms of expenditure management, we've got a paragraph there, so here we say effective steps were not taken to prevent irregular expenditure as required by sections 51(1)(b)(2) of the PFMA. The expenditure disclosed does not reflect the full extent of the irregular expenditure incurred as indicated basis for qualification paragraph. And then also for fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we've got a paragraph that says effective steps were not taken to prevent fruitless and wasteful expenditure amounting to 0.2 million. As disclosed in Note 39 to the annual financial statements in contravention of Section 51(b)(2) of the PFMA. I know the amount may seem small, but in terms of our qualitative aspects that we look at, it's above our materiality level. Okay. And then lastly, for asset management, we said proper control systems to safeguard and maintain assets were not implemented as required by Section 51A and 51C of the PFMA, as the policy was not consistently applied in all cases. Okay. Assurance providers, I've touched on this earlier. Okay, so you'll see our first level of assurance is normally provided by management and leadership. So we've got senior management, we've got the accounting officers, as well as accounting authorities where applicable, and then we've got the executive authority. So you'll see for the first two columns, we've got a 50-50 split. So the 50% in green is relating to Department of Public Enterprises. The 50% in yellow is relating to SAFCO. And then in our last column for the executive authority, because it's only one executive authority, we say it's 100%, it's still in. It provides some assurance. So this takes into account the audit opinions in terms of SAFCO as well. Okay. For a second level of assurance, for internal audit and the audit committee, it's also 50-50 split. So in terms of SAFCOL, if we look at the bottom blocks for the yellow, SAFCOL's internal audit and audit committee could have played a greater role in ensuring that the financial statements submitted were of the appropriate and reliable quality for the audit. Okay? And then for a third level of assurance, for the portfolio committees, we said 100%. They provide us with assurance. This is based on all the interactions we've had to date and the feedback we received. Okay, the section 4.3 audit. Okay.
Thanks, Chair. Just to give context to the letter that I earlier circulated, now that we're moving on to the section 4.3 audit. So there is sort of a misalignment between the audit report table for Donnell last Friday and the one that we've just presented now. So that letter seeks to clarify that misalignment around Donnell. Thanks.
I think honorable members must have read the letter that there was an effort to correct the audit as done by Susan Saluba, and the department did not align with that correction. As a result, they presented here an uncorrected statement. In other words, in simple terms, it can be interpreted as misleading the committee. But the honorable members will find a way of dealing with that. But it is being put on record now. We'll handle that at a particular point in time. We should proceed. Is there another presentation? You are done.
Now,
continue.
Now, Chair.
Proceed.
Thanks.
Proceed.
Thank you. Okay, the audit's not audited by AGSA. Okay, Platinum, ESCOM, Transnet, Donnell, and Alexco. Okay. The audit outcome for the year ended 31 March 2017. Okay, so in terms of Alexco, it was an unqualified opinion in terms of financial statements. However, there was material findings for predetermined objectives as well as compliance with laws and regulations. So for predetermined objectives, there was findings relating to the usefulness and reliability of performance information reported. And then for material findings, we had findings on expenditure management and procurement, but I'll touch on it shortly. Okay. So for Donnell, for the financial statements, it's an unqualified opinion. For the predetermined objectives, we said there's no material findings. And then relating to compliance with laws and regulations, there is material findings as per the latest audit report. And then for ESCOM, for the financial statements, it's a qualified audit opinion due to the completeness of the irregular expenditure disclosure note. For predetermined objectives, we've had material findings in the current year relating to the usefulness and reliability of the predetermined objectives. And then we've also got material findings for compliance with laws and regulations, so this relates to expenditure management as well as the procurement and contract management processes. For Transnet, for financial statements, it's an unqualified audit opinion. However, there is material findings for both the predetermined objectives as well as the compliance with laws and regulations. Okay. The predetermined objectives, the conclusion, okay, so in terms of Alexco, there was no material misstatements. However, there was material findings relating to usefulness as well as the reliability of the information reported. So it's consistent with the prior year movement. Okay, so for Donnell, there was no material misstatements. There was also no material misstatement or findings relating to usefulness and reliability of performance information. It's consistent with the prior year. And then for ESCOM, there was material misstatements which were corrected. On the usefulness of information, there was no material findings. However, on the reliability of the predetermined objectives, there was material findings, and then this is a regression compared to the prior year. So for Transnet, there was no material misstatements, and then you did, however, there was material findings relating to the usefulness and reliability of information reported. And that's consistent with the prior year as well. Okay. The following slide relates to irregular expenditure and fruitless and wasteful expenditure in terms of the SOCs, and it's a comparison of the current year and prior year. So for LEXCO, you'll notice that in the 2016-17 year, it was 10.4 million, and then compared to the 15-16 year, it was 6.9 million, so it increased slightly. And then the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, 2016-17, 3.2 million, it also increased from the prior year of 200,000. And then if we look at the NEL for the current year, 2016-17 year, there's 146 million of irregular expenditure compared to the prior year of 49 million. And then for ESCOM, it's 4 billion for the 2016-17 year compared to the 15-16 year of 106 million. And then for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, it's 547 million compared to the 15-16 year of 93 million. That increase is as a result of an investigation that was conducted and finalized. And then for Transnet, it's 922.5 million compared to the prior year of 25.1 million. And then for the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, for the 16-17 year, it's 21.9 million compared to the 15-16 year of 3.9 million. And then I'll touch on some of the items that gave rise to these irregular expenditure findings, or most common types. Okay. And then, so for the irregular expenditure, there was deficiencies in the procurement and supply chain management processes. Okay. Then we come to the status of key commitments by the minister. Okay. So the following commitments were made by the minister in relation to the performance of the department as well as the oversight function of the department over the state-owned companies, the four three entities. Okay, so there was three recommendations which were implemented. So the first one was for the department was for the submission of financial statements for audit that are free from material misstatements. It was improving the internal control processes in the prevention and detection of irregular expenditure, as well as ensuring clean administration for the department in order to lead as an example for the portfolio. And then the commitments in relation to oversight function of the department over the SOCs. So the first one, we've got oversight meetings with the chairpersons of boards and audit and risk committees within the portfolio. So forums have been set up. There's consistent occurrence of meetings which happened, which needs to happen, so it's in progress. And then the second one is DPE officials to attend board meetings and audit and risk committee meetings for SOCs as observers. That's not yet implemented. The next one is quarterly engagement with the DPE officials and executive management of state-owned companies. It's implemented and is happening. And then the next one is concluding of the Government Shareholder Management Act, the SOC reform. So this is still in progress. And then lastly, supporting SOCs to ensure they conduct business in a financial, sustainable manner without government support. So that's still in progress. Okay. And then the last slide, we're nearly there, is proposed recommendations for implementation by the portfolio committee. Okay, so the first one is the portfolio committee must request management to provide feedback on the implementation and progress of the action plans to address poor audit outcomes for the DPE portfolio during quarterly reporting, as well as monitor the progress of actions implemented. The second one is a list of action taken against transgressors must be provided quarterly to the portfolio committee for follow-up of all irregular and fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred in relation to the DPE portfolio. And then the last one, the portfolio committee should monitor implementation of commitments by the accounting officers or accounting authorities, as well as the executive authority. Okay, and then our second last slide talks to corruption. So normally it's a case where there's a monopoly and people are allowed to exercise their discretion and where there isn't really any accountability. So if you remove the accountability from the equation, you could end up with corruption. Thank you. Okay, and then these are just ways of staying in touch with the HESA. Thank you.
Thank you. You're true. Yeah. I think what about was the big challenge that probably as we interact more suitable when the department is here, is how do we ensure that the tasks that emanate out of the committee as a result of interacting with the department are contained in action plans so that the oversight committee has a particular program to ensure that those tasks are implemented. Because the biggest challenge you face, the poor performance by the state-owned enterprise is always a problem that must not be accepted. Because the government is saying, we want to do this ourselves. So if you want to do it yourself, you must do it properly. So that's a challenge you're faced with. Once you say, I'm the right one to do it, then you must do it properly. So that's a big challenge you face. But all members, here is the presentation. Interact with it, your comments, your questions. Honorable Dr. Liang, Honorable Mozwell, Honorable Gordon, Honorable Lamin, can we shoot? Not in a literal sense.
Oh. Thank you, Chairperson. Let me appreciate the input by Auditor General as it relates to all the entities under the Department of Public Enterprises. First and foremost, Chairperson, the issue that relates to fruitless and irregular expenditure is a normal language in the government of all departments and entities. But I want to check now from the Auditor General as to whether there is any kind of a relationship with the internal audit units of entities and the department to ensure that there is no perpetual kind of condoning irregular and fruitless expenditures as being a better scenario than doing a wrong practice, because it is not said there is any kind of a sanction once a particular finding has been made by Auditor General. Auditor General hasn't got a sanction to say, now that you have faltered here, this is what you do. And the other question, Chair, that I would want to check from AG is to whether they are satisfied that as AG, their findings are taken serious by all entities. And where I would maybe think, if they are taken serious, we will see a high level of improvement. But now where there are regressions, then I have a problem and say, maybe if the engagement with Auditor General, with the entities and the department are only these that are evaluating, because the work of the AG, in my own understanding, it's an evaluation kind of. Then the monitoring part of it during the progress of the work, then intervention can be made in order that at the tail end, there is a better kind of a result as a result of the interaction during the progress of the work. On inventory holding, the asset management, does AG expect maybe an inclusive or a central asset management policy of all entities and the department may be centered at the department level. I'm asking this, Chairperson, because the properties and the manner in which they are disposed of result in a number of different kind of end results of such management of those particular properties, even if those properties are similar. Say immovable properties are the same in the majority of cases. That is there a single manner of assessing the management of that as AG? Then lastly, Chair, this letter about the name, it means that there was a mistake as a result of either of the participants, including AG. Now, one might have a question that says, how many errors of this nature where they were not identified and corrected, and then we have a report on the basis of an error that has been made by anyone? So what is the indication of this, that you make a finding and then at a later stage there is a discovery of an error made by anyone? Then my problem is, it how many entities that are affected by similar kind of errors? Ngosihle.
Maybe, but they will clarify that. My understanding is that the error was committed during the process of audit. But they will correct that. They will correct that because they write reports, they discuss, they engage. Probably during that period it was dealt with, but they will correct it because it's a very important question. Honorable Mazur.
Thanks very much. Worrying the state of affairs when one looks at what we had before us today. Chairperson, I've often said that SACCOL is like the stepchild in departments and public enterprises that everyone ignores, because it's relatively small amounts of money and they're not really in the limelight as much as your ESCOMs and other Transnet are. The people tend to forget about SACCOL. And I've warned many times that, you know, this is one of those entities that mustn't be ignored, because we've become almost immune to the word millions in our country. We're so used to billions being used that when we say a million, it seems like a small amount of money. But it's still, we're talking about obscene amounts of money that are being detected here as having fallen by the wayside, as fruitless and wasteful expenditure and oddities occurring, Chair. And Chair, especially with SACCOL, I think the AG just needs to give us an indication of how we as a committee even start to approach the fact that left behind in all this chaos, SACCOL, the AG found that 99% of the occurrences were non-compliant with SCM. Now, that's very worrying, because it means that we have people at the helm who really don't know where and what and how they should be doing things. So if we could just have a little bit of a briefing by the AG as to how a company would allow itself to get to a position where the AG is making this kind of finding. Because I think it's a damning finding. And certainly it's incredibly worrying as we go forward. Chair, I like when the AG gives us proposals, because we're here to interact with the AG and we take advice from AG. And we always have done, and we respect the audit findings of the AG. And one of the things that the AG suggests is that the committee must request management to provide feedback and implementation of progress of action plans to address poor audit outcomes. Now, this is another song we've been singing for years, Chair. We have asked over and over and over again to get the contracts, the KPI reports, for us as a committee to know exactly what is expected from each one of the state-owned entities. And we are run around the bush, we are taken from pillar to post, and we really get none of this kind of information. And I think it's time, you know, as we start entering, you know, into the inquiries into state capture, and we start looking at state-owned entities in a much broader fashion than we have been before, that this is a major failing. And it's not only a failing to the Public Enterprises Committee, but a failing to a recommendation made by the Auditor General, who is a sacrosanct body that we as Parliament look to in terms of exercising our accountability. And this isn't the first time that the AG has made this kind of proposal. And yet this proposal is ignored, and continuously so. So one has to ask, you know, why does the AG make a recommendation that is continuously ignored? There has to be a reason behind it. And I think, you know, we ask a pretty loaded question because we know what the answer is going to be, and it's just because it's not convenient for us to know exactly what the problems are, what the KPIs are, what the contracts are, what employment contracts are, what performance contracts are. It's just not convenient for us to get the truth. Chair, a lot of what we're going to deal with is going to be dealt with when we have the presentation by the DPE. But Chair, I just want to ask the AG, and you know, I apologise for putting the AG in a difficult situation, because I understand that you are in a difficult situation, and you know, you have to play on very fair playing fields. But you know, to receive a letter from the Auditor General where we are told that the Auditor General had to request an auditing firm to reconsider their opinion, and that auditing firm then did reconsider their opinion. It leads me to ask this question, Chair. How secure are we in the knowledge that the audit's being done by firms that are not our Auditor General are correct, for lack of a better term, that they are transparent, that they are free from any political interference, free from any, Chair, as you very diplomatically put it, any modus of massaging of the truth? Because I look at this, and I now am seriously concerned that I'm going to go and relook any audit done by S&G. I'm going to have a serious look at you know, any possible contraventions, and also whether or not the AG has recommended a relook of the opinion of any of the other audit firms. And Chair, I ask this in light of things, you know, given the KPMG scandal that's happening around our country at the moment, one has to look at these firms that we're using and ask, how did it get to the point that this was allowed to happen? Thank you, Chair.
Honourable Gordon.
Thank you, Chair, and thanks to the AG colleagues for their presentation. I just want to pick up where Honourable Massoni left off, and which is we are living through, at the moment, an interesting crisis in relation to the credibility of auditing firms and auditors. And as you know, better than us, auditors and auditing firms are relied upon by the public to provide assurance that the financials on the one hand, but also other relevant operational matters are consistent with what the firm or entity is telling the public. Now, in that context, I want to pick up the Danel issue and the S&G audit. Could you give us details, please? What were the areas of difference? What exactly did S&G say that you thought you disagreed with or you disagreed with? There might be 20 examples, give us 3 or 4. And what did it take to get S&G to change their view on this matter? But I think this is the first time in my experience of coming across this kind of interaction and change of audit opinion. And again, the context is very important. And whether the relationship relationship between auditors and the firms or entities that they actually audit is something that needs to be seriously reviewed. But in that light also, on slide 14 of your presentation, from 2013-14 to 2015-16, you have Danelle as unqualified. Am I right? The green. Now, if that's the case, and SNG came on board in about 2012, if I'm correct. So that covers this particular three-year period as well. Now, have you looked back at this three-year period to see whether the same mistake made for 16-17 or set of mistakes, and are they mistakes, or are they oversight matters, or there was lack of diligence? Well, what's the issue? I think you need to take us and the public into confidence in that regard. So having said that, what about these 3 years? Who's going to look at those? Do they stand for historical record as unqualified opinion? And can we actually rely upon that? Then I want to come back to Chair. The third matter is the question of the department. Whilst the department will answer for itself a little later, what we have before us is the AG's assessment of the department, financials and performance. And in that regard, if you look at the mission statement of the department, it talks about making sure that SOCs do what they're supposed to do, or putting it in plain language. Page 60 of the annual report covers the issue of corruption. If we look at what's written there, it's actually pathetic, given what we know in the public domain, because you now have, what, three entities at least, Danelle, Transnet, and Eskom, that's on this list, that have a plethora of emails, an issue I'll come back to, indicating all sorts of misdemeanors which have not been charged in court or elsewhere, which means they stand as the truth at this particular point in time. So, and yet, I think the AG might want to itself examine the way it actually presents the results of its audit, given the current circumstances. Given the current circumstances, where there is such serious concern amongst the public and indeed ourselves about the abuse of public funds, about the stealing of public funds, and more plainly, corruption as well. Thirdly, in that context, you're also looking at the performance of the department more broadly. And the emails indicate, for example, the role of the Director General in potentially being the source of information in relation to the business being found in certain quarters. And that, again, is in the public domain. Did you look at these matters? What are the implications of those matters for both the entity and the kind of oversight role that the department is required to play? And can you actually say that the department has actually played an effective oversight role when the kind of, let's put it politely, misdemeanors that we actually see are actually happening at this particular point in time? The last question for now, Chairperson, is a three-pager or four-pager that we have as a report from the Audit Committee. I don't know if there is any Audit Committee member present. But at some stage, we've got to look at the functioning of Audit Committees as well. Because on page 2 of the Audit Committee report, and the AG does interact with the Audit Committee as well, in the middle of this page, and I'd like the AG to comment on this, is four bullet points, which says that these are areas of concern or assessment of internal audit reports. Lack of supporting evidence for reported performance information achievement. Some of the performance indicators and targets are not meeting SMART criteria requirements. And there's two others that I mentioned. I won't take up your time right now. How material are these? And should should they have impacted on your audit opinion? So in some, Chair, we're saying that we are dealing with entities where it is well known in the public domain that there is serious corruption taking place or allegations of corruption. How does that actually impact upon the AG's opinion at the end of the day? And who do we hold responsible, both in the entity and in the department itself? And by department, I include the ministry. Thank you.
The AG, you know, here you are saying you are the supreme audit institution. Tell me, because you know when you get these reports all the time, we're told about a wasteful expenditure that amounts to billions and millions of everything. South Call, it's a mess, as the Honorable Godan said, it's out there for everyone to know. Can we, because as the portfolio committee, ours is to do an oversight. And in most cases that in these institutions, because these are public institutions, you find that there are individuals who are accounting or authorities in these institutions, which they do these things and they just keep moving from one department to another department. They all over, they even come to parliament and they preside over things. Is it possible within the confines of the law that when you come with these reports going forward as a proposal, Chairperson, if you're going to come to us and say, this is what has happened to Subcall, who was that person? Can we just get the name of that person so that we can be able to deal with these issues? Because you'll find that some of these people, it becomes an arrangement that they move from one area to another area, the same individual. But if we get to know the names, then we can be able to put a stop on these issues. Because you'll find it's a common thread. It's the same people, they just get shifted. You'll see now with ESCO. Some people you find them in Transnet and vice versa and all those issues. When you ask questions, they say, no, this person was a manager at ESCOM in 2008, now he's messing up at Transnet. Because we don't get to know who are these people. Because this issue of that, just we come here and they were just told that, no, it's a qualified audit, wasteful expenditures, the next thing is recommendation. And we could see that all the years you put recommendations, but there's regression. That means even those recommendations, no one is paying attention to. And these wasteful expenditures, we've seen even in the municipalities, it's when money is diverted for other corrupt activities. But they just come as wasteful expenditures and life goes on. Can we be given names of the people that were responsible for the current year, that this year, this is what happened to Transnet, and these are the individuals that were responsible, so that at least we can do an oversight that is that has a bite on it. Because right now it's just a talk shop. There's nothing we can do. We just get these recommendations. Next year we'll be sitting with the same issues. That's why even you get to an issue where as the AG comes to us and say on what was picked up as SNTA to reconsider the opinion. But it doesn't stop there. It says DNL management resisted. So that means they resisted and they went ahead to come to Parliament and submit an incorrect report. So there's a lot of arrogance. Do they take you serious, these people? Because if you come as a supreme, once you say supreme, it's a different story. And then you've got management that just resists. When you tell them that, no, what you are submitting is wrong, they just resist. Point blank, and then they say, we're going to submit. Obviously, there's a lot of arrogance. Do they take you serious? That's why we say, but instead of saying to us, it's management, maybe we must start giving us names, because we're not scared of them. We're not going to call them by management. We'll call them by their names and say, these are the issues that we have with you. And then we'll make those people account. Because this story of management, and you find ESCOM, there are a lot of employees that have got no idea of what is happening. But the whole institution is going down, and every time you meet even junior managers of ESCOM in depots say ESCOM is corrupt. But those are just hard-working, honest public servants that have got no idea of what's happening with the management. Can we be given names of these people? Every time we get these reports, like these ones of DNL,
Which one? Who's this person that is so arrogant that when you say this is wrong, and then he tells, and then he resists and says, I'm going to go ahead and do as I please. Let those people let's be given their names, then we can be able to attend to that. Because as things stand, it's just paperwork, we don't know what to do with it now. Thanks.
Thank you. I've got some other members. Just before they start, I just wanted to raise one or two issues. So one of the challenging issues, AG, is, I don't know whether the right word is post-fact or whatever. Maybe let me not use Latin words. After effect. I think Honorable Liang raised this issue in a particular way. I think the biggest challenge, which in all areas we have interfaced with AG, is this insistence on dealing with departments after effect. Because if APPs, the articulated information for realization of the predetermined objectives from the onset, Ms. Zogala, is wrong. There's something wrong in expecting something wonderful from it at the end of the year. If the APP, where the plan performance information is articulated, it's wrong. There's something odd to expect at the end of the financial year. In other words, if you know that it is wrong, to stay for the whole year waiting to do auditing, you are waiting to do auditing of something you know is going to be wrong. I'm not sure if I make my point. So that is where the serious problem begins. Because why, with so much money committed, billions committed, would our oversight institutions keep quiet when a clear APP is articulated wrongly? Because no proper results are going to emerge. Whatever results are coming there, they are coming through an information which is not useful, which is not reliable. And I'm saying this because I've seen it. I just want to quote you some few examples from your own statements. For instance, I forget my glasses. I think they are 20 rand, they have just broken. In your summary document, this one, where you speak about performance information, the selected programs for that purpose, you are saying no material findings. I just wanted to refer you to one or two issues in terms of how that information is written by the department. In page 31 of the annual report, page 31, are we together? Page 31, where you are dealing with performance on the legal and governance. This thing says strategic objective. I move from a point, Mr. Gala, that an objective is a state that you want to realize. It's not an activity. You foresee a particular state that you want to realize. And naturally, therefore, your indicators will make sense if you know what kind of changes you expect to demonstrate whether you are proceeding towards that state. Now, if you go to page 31, in legal and government, it says strengthen the shareholder function. Is that a state or an activity? I'm saying this because AG says no material at all, no material findings. But I'm pointing here on what we have selected. It says strengthen the shareholder function. Is that a state or an activity? it's not a stay, why is there no material finding? Because how do you measure that? Again, if you go to the row below that, row one, row two, row two, it says they strengthen the risk management practice. Again, I'm calling, is that an activity or a stake? Let's go now to what is a plan target in that row. It said outcome-based shareholder risk reporting procedure manual. Is that automatic? Is it automatic that once it's there, is that which is required? Why I'm putting this is that you can have that. It may not be what is required. Again, to say a manual, you're not saying anything. Because you want a particular state described in substance, not just form. So that you know when you get here, it is a state you want, not just a manual. All I'm saying, my worry, Mr. Ola, is that you guys say no material finding. But I want to ask you, is this a stage or an activity? This is a matter I think in government we need to engage about. Because most of the problem, as far as I'm concerned, emanate in the ability to find one another in this language. Whether you talk about reduction of risk and anything else, unless this information is sorted, but if the AG says this, there's nobody. Okay, let me not repeat it three times. All I'm saying is that why do we tolerate APPs that have wrong performance information? I understand your job is not to force department to do what you want them to do. Your job is to audit and make opinions. Executive authorities are supposed to make the department to do what they are supposed to based on the report. That's not your job. I understand that. But I'm dealing with what I believe is your job. When you say no material finding, I have a problem having read what I've read on legal and governance. Can you respond?
All right. Thank you very much, Chairperson and members. Let me start with the first questions that we asked. There was a question asked around, are we satisfied that our findings are taken seriously? I will say by some auditees, yes, they are. Not all of them. Like, for instance, if I were to pick up the example of SAFCOT, the honorable member did point out that, you know, she's been warning around SAFCOT for many years. Indeed, I can say, yes, SAFCOT was not qualified in prior years, but this wave of irregular expenditure, deviations, and, you know, I don't want to say disregard of the prescripts, you know, was always there as an undertone until it reached a point where it overpowers your financial management and or undermines the good financial management there, to the point we had to modify the opinion, because they themselves didn't even have a hold to say this is how much irregular expenditure we have incurred this year. That's a staff call now. So I think the entity, when it briefs the committee, they will go into some of the details, you know, that were unique in 16-17. Yes, there are those, but I think it was a long way coming. So yes, some do take us seriously, but others, you know, you will find a slow response, like we always point out in our presentations around rectifying these things whilst there's still time. Then, Chair, there was a question around a central system for inventory and asset management for all the departments and entities. I do understand the honourable member's you know, point of view to say maybe if you've got something similar, stable, safe, the same for everybody, then you could control it better. But I think the difficulty then will come, you know, around the uniqueness of the businesses across government, departments and entities. Which is why, I mean, if you ask me, Section 38 of the PFMA directly will put the responsibility with the accounting officer to say, you need, for your unique business, you need to put and ensure an effective, efficient and transparent system of financial risk management internal control. And then when you go into entity section 51, we'll put that same responsibility to the board. So, you know, respectfully, I think I will put it back to the accounting officers and the accounting authorities as required by the PFMA to say, for your unique business and challenges and circumstances, then you need to put an adequate, effective, and efficient system to address your inventory and asset management issues. Chair, there was a question around SAFCO. I think the member made quite a few comments there. But I think insofar as SAFCO is concerned, especially around this outcome this year, the modified outcome, the qualification. So far, I think as an office, we have gone over and above to try to make sure that SAFCO, what you endured in 2017, does not continue or repeat itself. We've had debrief workshops with them, not just the top player, but middle management, taking them through for half a day, the exact issues they tripped on, why they received a qualified audit opinion, and how they can avoid that. So a lot of these things, again, Chair, as you know, they come around procurement and contract management, where contracts, some contracts will extend and you know, payments keep being made whilst the contract itself expired a long time ago. So those disciplines need to be injected back into SAFCO, and they need to realize the impact of all of that. Then, Chair, there was a question around why do we keep making the same recommendation and that is consistently being ignored. And I think in that sense, Chair, I will take it back to the opening slides that Unovlin put up, the where we talk about the accountability wheel, where some people need to plan, some people need to do the checking and the action. And I think you rightly put it across that the work that you do can only be done by yourselves. The work that management does can and should only be done by management. So they are the doers. They are the ones entrusted to make sure the organization functions, meets their objectives, which link to the MTSF, which link to the NDP, and so on and so forth. So you've got different people in the chain, and when each does their work properly, then, you know, magic happens. And I think where we're sitting, I made an example in a committee yesterday to say, even if I know as an auditor, I know exactly what the problem is here, I should tell you about it, but I can't help you put together a quick asset register as an example to say, this is the asset register I've been telling you about, do this, accept these fields. The assumption is you're appointed in that position, you know what should be happening, and then you should be delivering those commitments. Chair, there's lots of questions raised around Danelle. So the colleagues from SNG are here, and I think the main issue that we pointed out to SNG was around the material non-compliance there. So there is a non-compliance matter that needed to be reported and elevated into the audit report. That was not elevated at the time that we saw the audit report, and therefore we brought it into the attention of SNG, of the private auditors, to say, please relook into this area, reevaluate, and make sure that we come into the right audit opinion and one that is consistent with how the others have been reported in this area. And I'm happy to say they duly listened to our inputs and made those you know, adjustments. And then I think the colleague, like I said, will take us through, you know, the other details as the committee has requested. And then, Chair, there was questions around the credibility of the other audit reports for the other 4-3s that we do not audit. I think as an audit office, over and above saying that we will not, or we opt to not audit Eskom or Transnet or Danel, we do work over and above working with the auditors and sometimes even with the management of these SOCs to sit with them, to guide, to, you know, share information, we'll sit with in committees or hold workshops, we'll share and exchange ideas, make sure we're all on the same page. Because if you look into this portfolio, Chair, you've got six entities, as we pointed out, two are audited by us and four by them. We need to make sure when we come to this committee, we report the same thing. If the same thing happened across all six, both firms or both organizations will highlight that issue. So we do those engagements, but obviously there are limitations because we do not have access to the files, we do not have access to management, we do not have access to the contracts. They do that work, but through those engagements, then we're able to sharpen each other and say, but, you know, maybe you need to go towards that area and look into it because, as an example, it's in the media, and we think it's a risk, you know, how far have you gone into this area? And I'm happy to say, so far, the colleagues do listen to us, and they have listened to us. Chair, there was a question around us sharing the names of the people that transgress. In addition to the audit report, Chair, we do prepare what we call a management report. The management report will be a very thick report, for lack of a better word, going through each of the findings. So if there's qualification areas, an example in procurement and contract management, in the management report you'll find all the findings that make up that particular qualification area, explaining, you know, the relevant manager or the relevant head of unit, you know.
This place to deal with that is the department. All what we need is the report that you've given, because whatever you have found, whatever finding, is located somewhere within the department. It becomes the duty of the department to account on the failure of those managers. But what is key in answering the member is that management report that you're saying you maybe to share with the committee. So the committee can be able, when they meet with the department, to say the management report from AG gave us the following. What have you done with regard to the people who are in charge? Well, I think the department is better placed to account on that.
I agree with that, Chair. Thanks. And if requested, we could make available those management reports like you pointed out. And then why do we leave the APPs for long and then point it out a bit later? Chair, as an office, over and above what we are required to do, which is to audit the financial statements, the performance information and compliance with the laws and regulations, we do proactive auditing of these APPs, especially in the department space. We do that work, Chair, and we will escalate it to the department. If the department listens and makes the, the changes, Chair, then they will make the changes and resubmit that APP. And in some cases, we have come and actually briefed some committees to say the APP for 18-19 was like this, and we made certain recommendations. Here's the final one now, the adjusted one. So far, and I'll say a majority of the departments do listen to our input right at that early stage, even before the year starts, and they cast those targets in stone to make sure they're smart. You know, they fit the SMART criteria. My colleagues will help me fill the other questions.
I hope you are not finished unless they are going to deal with what I've pointed. I want us to engage on the legal governance findings that you have so that you can clarify to us why do you see that as a state to be realized, not an activity.
Thank you. I'm going to start with the question that was raised in terms of the audit committee report that had the metrics on AOPO. So what, in terms, that was specific to the department. So what happened is that normally internal audit will do their predetermined objectives audit throughout the year. Then we will come in at the end of the year. So what's unique for the department is that certain objectives are annual, and then certain processes during the quarter are not properly, they don't adequately do documentation. So what the internal audit was picking up was more in terms of during the quarter, there were no supporting documents that could be provided. So when we came in at the year end and the objectives had been realized, we were able to obtain supporting documents for those objectives. So therefore, the reports that the internal audit that go into the audit committee report was metals that they were identifying throughout the period.
Sorry for... That is Miss?
Nesamari.
Samari?
Nesamari.
Nesamari. I think the question is, it's not what you have discovered after the performance. It's the usefulness of what is before you. You say, in terms of reliability and usefulness of the information, not the result. So I'm saying, what is written here, why does it mean a state to you in the manner it's written? Because you're talking about the usefulness of the information, not the result. You can't have a useless information and get a good result. I think we've got a reason why the information must be correct. So that's what I want you to clarify.
Honorable Chair, normally with the APP that the departments provide, they will have the tables that they have that have the program, and behind the document they will have the technical indicators.
So that we move to other members. I want you to deal with this specific one.
Yes, I'm dealing with
I don't want that this is a state to me. This is a state. Let's not talk. Here is in front of you.
Yes.
Just tell us about it. Because I'm saying, when you say draft concept paper, that's not a qualified state. When you say manual on risk, whatever, that's not a qualified state. It's just a manual. You don't qualify what you want to see and so on. Both that and that. So let's deal with this specific one. Say to us, as far as we're concerned, this is an intended state, and explain why it's in terms of this information, not the results you audited.
Noted. Honorable Chair, the statement in terms of the two indicators, we regarded them to be the intended objective. Due to that, we considered what they had in the document, plus the technical indicator descriptor that is included in the APP, and also through discussions that we had with the department. Because for us to look at the SMART principles, yes, the wording itself, as it is written, when a person reads it cold, it is not 100% clear, but there are other elements that we would have considered in terms of whether the objective is SMART.
This is a very important issue. You want to say something? Because if I hear you, you say, even if this information is not useful, as you look at the document, you come across an indicator that makes sense, then it saves the useless information. That's what you're saying. Or do you want to make a point? We'll close it at some stage. An indicator is a sub-information to this. This is the primary information. An indicator is a sub-information. Now, once the correctness of the main information is dependent on the sub-information, that's the problem with. I don't need a dialogue between myself and yourself at the risk of wasting the committee's time. Yes, but all I'm saying, this is a matter outside this we need to engage on. I can with confidence say there is a problem with it. Not from the department, from the way AG is reading it. Because we depend on you to correct these things. Right? Do you want to say anything more? Okay. So, SNG, talk about what happened, the criteria for regular expenditure, whatever.
I think it's going to be more specific on the DINEL issue. Actually, point of correction, I mean, the technical correctness of the audit report, audit opinion that was sent out, it was picked up before the AGM. Hence, at the AGM, I mean, there was a recommendation. The DINEL AGM is. I think I'm answering this with a bit of a background check, if you can allow me, because you need to understand these things to be in context. Because if I'm just coming on top without the context, then it's going to put things like I'm in out of. What has transpired? There was a draft audit report that was presented at an audit committee level. And then subsequent to that, through our quality control and risk management, because we checked the consistency of the audit opinions that we issued out in all the state-owned companies that we've got in our portfolio as SNG. We picked up the inconsistency with the DINEL audit report, and then we highlighted it to the engagement director, and we said you need to engage on this. With the executive, to be specific, the acting CFO. So at the AGM, when the audit report with an opinion was supposed to be tabled, and the engagement director highlighted to the meeting that the audit report that was included in the PEN has subsequently been updated because there were issues that were not included in the audit report. Specifically, it related to the irregular expenditure that was disclosed in the annual financial statements. I think it was note 35 that wasn't included in the audit report. And then there was an engagement with the CFOs. But the long and short of it, there was a bit of resistance from the executives and the CFO of DINEL to issue the correct audit report. And then when there was an engagement, and then they said to us, the report before at the AGM has already been tabled to certain funders. And then our take was, I'm prepared to go and sit with those funders to go through to follow the proper process, because it's incorrect to issue a technically incorrect audit report. But subsequent to that, I mean, we have failed to come up to a conclusion, and hence this letter that was circulated in this portfolio committee to between us and DINEL.
Probably if you understood, Honorable Gordon, this is not about DINEL much. DINEL's issue is unacceptable. It has to be dealt with. Both members, Member Mazur and Member Gordon, is about the integrity of the opinion by auditors. The critical point here, as articulated by the team of Ms. Zorala, is that your interpretation of the criteria are the key word, not DINEL's interpretation. You corrected it. The rest is just. The critical question we are engaging on is, They established that your interpretation of the criteria to evaluate irregular expenditure might have been incorrect. I think for the reputation of Sizwe and Salumba, that is what you have to explain yourself on. We'll deal with the failure of DINEL to deal with the correction. But the critical question is that, can we hear you on that?
Thank you, Chair. Hence, I said to you, I mean, when I was explaining to you, and saying, this issue wasn't only picked up by the Auditor General. Our quality control and risk management process picked it up when we were doing the assessment and in terms of are we consistent in throughout, our audit report for the state-owned companies. So we picked up that issue where we said there's inconsistency in the draft audit opinion that has been presented at the school committee at DINEL. So the instruction which came from SNG was to tell the engagement director to go and change the audit opinion that must be, that was going to be presented at the AGM. And as a result of that, there were some internal processes that we followed as a firm. I mean, the director, I mean, implicated and affected in this whole thing, I mean, has been dealt with in terms of the internal process. But the long and short of it, it wasn't only the AG that comes up with these things. Our quality control and risk management department picked it up and alerted to the engagement director and says, you need to correct this. Engage with the CFO before the AGM because the audit report as it stands, it's not correct. So what AG, I mean, said to us, it was already been picked up by quality control and risk management. We do. They know, we've been engaging them. Our assumption is that it's when this information came to you that you were able to make this comment. But they are saying, within themselves, they had already dealt with. Can you clarify us on that?
I think there's various stages to this thing, Chair. But the report that we were engaging on with SNG seemed to be the final report, which is why we, you know, invited the partner in charge to say, you know, let's have a meeting, because we wrote first. Let's have a meeting and explain to us how you reached, you know, the what you call this conclusion. So he did come and he did explain. He did not mention to us, I mean, the QC process by SNG internally may have been there, but he did not explain it to us. It seemed a new issue to him. Now we're talking to one person in front of us, and then we engaged. And he did concede at some point that, you know, an amendment is necessary and needs to be made. And then he started the process to engage the now.
I think our intention is not to get in a hearing between yourselves. Because what is key, you hear what the AG says. No, switch off your... You hear what the AG says. That's why you had to ask that question, because it would have been redundant of them, or a waste of time of to report this thing to us if you guys dealt with it. But the minute they speak, they say they had discussions with you after discovering what they believed was your final report, and they didn't know about what you are saying. And let me see what the Honourable Member said. Many, Dr. Liang.
I think, firstly, let me thank our colleagues from the AG for clarity, because the way this point 5 is formulated, it says there was, inverted commas, completed. Well, it doesn't use the word completed, but it says, Danelle's clean audit opinion, which came from SNG. So it's an opinion issued already. So we hear the point that there might have been some quality check, but... when and how that quality check was undertaken is still a question we're not convinced on. Secondly, it appears what was handed to the AG or what came across their desk was, inverted commas, a final audit opinion. Now, these are small matters in the overall scheme of things, but if you remember my first question, which is the credibility of the audit industry in South Africa and indeed elsewhere in the world. Second point that we made earlier on is you are dealing with entities whose reputations have been seriously marred by corruption. Right? How do auditors sleep at night when all of these things are in the public domain? How do you meet executives from Danelle, for example? Even its chairperson of its board, who's allegedly mentioned in emails and so on. I don't know about others, but you know you had Danelle Asia, Laser VR, and so on and so on. So there's a third point here, Chair, and that is that our colleagues are not listening at the moment, but I'm talking to you. The third point is that the technical material here might sound fine, but it doesn't really reflect for the public what is going on in these entities. Because ultimately, all of this is about the public interest. These are public entities. They're not private entities. They're not somebody's private toy, although they like to believe it is. So I think there's some issues that the two parties need to resolve. But what is before us is saying there was a clean audit opinion.
Thanks, Chair. No, I think the SNG team must just be honest with us. How do you send a report? So what kind of report do you send to the AG before it leaves your offices? Don't you do quality checks and everything? So you send half-baked reports to the AG to do what with them? Because once it gets signed, it's a final document. That's why it leaves your offices, and then it goes to another entity so that it can deal with it. So it can't be an issue that you send documents and then they are not quality checked. So what is it that we should take from the SNG? Because you are sitting here, you are doing audit on four state-owned entities that are in serious trouble. So when do we take your report seriously? Because once you handle those reports to the AG and they come even to Parliament, we take that as the final report. So you're going to go back and say to us, no, there was still some quality checks that we still do internally. That cannot be correct. You are just misleading us. Also, you on your trying to explain this whole issue, you bring the management and the board that you try to do this and they resisted this and this, and are you bowing down to the political pressure as auditors in this country? Because that's what we seem to be picking, that your autonomy and your independence as auditors to stem the authority and say, this is correct and this is not correct. Are you getting to a stage where, for the sake of getting business, you are bowing down to political deployees that are running this entity? Because those chairpersons and everyone, they are political deployees, and you seem to be bowing down on them. That's why we've got this mess of KPMG and everyone. Are you on that place as SNG? Because from where we're sitting, look like you're bowing down to the political pressure. So your credibility as an independent auditor now it comes to question from where we are sitting. But that story that you sent it to the AG and it was you were still doing your own checks, then I don't know what kind of an operation is that. Thank you.
Maybe when we deal with these issues, there's a possibility of a political pressure, but at the end of the day, these are professionals who must accept responsibility for their actions. Honorable Liang.
No, I think chairperson here, you have assisted SNG to say here it is not a matter of denial. It's not even a matter that is between you and AG. Your interaction with AG, your submission of information that is still outstanding, but a report is sent, is something else. But what is important is the authenticity, the credibility of your opinion, because the basis of that is your interaction with the entities to your satisfaction at the level that you need the information from them to enable you to reach an opinion. And then your submission to AG is an end result. We do not expect you to actually look upon AG to say yes. And then AG doesn't say yes. There's something outstanding. And then the more you get into this, you are getting into trouble, because you are creating more questions as you try to answer again.
In all of this, I think we're going around in circles in many aspects, because it comes down to, once again, the Auditor General's supremacy. As my colleague rightly said, they are the supreme auditing body. So why and how are they being questioned? But Chair, this is my major concern, especially when it comes down to this denial issue. The Auditor General requests SNG to suggest that SNG might relook their opinion. SNG then agree. They relook their opinion and they come back with a relooked opinion. So the opinion has been reformulated. Who is denial then to come back and say, we're not going to accept this reformulated opinion. I mean, this is cloud cuckoo land stuff. This is a Chapter 9 institution that we're dealing with. The AG is the supreme auditing body. What entity has the right to turn around to the AG and say, we are not accepting your advice or your suggestion? I mean, this is the stuff of madness. And to think that an entity, that this committee is basically the stakeholder body that looks after it, would turn around to the AG. It's the same as turning around to the public protector and saying, we won't accept your findings. It's tantamount to the same thing. This is a Chapter 9 institution. So we need to know from the AG, has this happened to you before? Is this the first time you've received this kind of letter, and have you had to do this kind of thing without us as a committee knowing? Because you can clearly see, as a committee, we're astounded and appalled that a Chapter 9 institution of the importance of the AG is being treated with such disdain by an entity that we oversee.
I think, Honourable Mosman, there's no one who will question your view of how appalling Tinel's behaviour is. But there are two different issues that are critical on the table. It's the behaviour of Tinel that you're articulating, but it's a grey area of a suspected collusion. It's a very, very critical one. Even that's why I was saying it's even more serious than Tinel. Now, the manner in which SNG answers makes it worse. Let me put it this way. What gives Tinel the courage to refuse? What motivates Tinel? Where do they get this bravery to refuse? That's a very, very critical question, Edward. What gives them the bravery? What gives them the bravery to refuse to correct? But the problem that Honorable Liang is actually coming with is complicated by SNG. SNG says, no, it's not just AG who corrected this thing. Well, now AG says, we were dealing what was supposed to be a final report with us. Meaning that if the AG did not pick up that would have gone with a clean audit with this having not been observed. Now, the process I want to propose, Honorable Mason, we'll have to deal with Tinel. That's a different issue. Tinel needs to account. But however, I propose to the committee that this is a material misunderstanding between AG and what we call and SNG. It suggests that a special session with the committee, in my view, where AG presents all the minutes of the meetings and the report that they receive from SNG, and SNG make their case, so the committee can establish the true facts, and committee can actually make an informed what to call opinion. I would propose that we leave it at that stage, because this is a material misunderstanding, especially taking into account what Member Gordon has actually reminded us of. Is it correct to leave it at that point?
Sorry, I had to go out for a few minutes, but my question about the previous 3 years of audit, was that answered? Having had this mishap in, 2016-17, and I made reference to the slide, which shows that, and the other information we have, that SNG was responsible for the audit at Danel from about 2012-13. So you have 3 years of unqualified audit. What happens to those? Are there questions of credibility around those audits that the AG is going to look into?
Richard, can I allow my colleague, because it was done by SNG?
Remember, what is key as you respond? You've been given the major entities, state-owned entities, which have got a history chronically of problems. Make your comment. We're closing now.
Thank you, Chair. I think there's been a number of questions that have been raised, and then the independency and the political pressure that, I mean, as a firm, we're getting on these things. I mean, I can categorically state here that, I mean, as a firm,
we adhere to our professional ethics, and then we don't bow down to any pressure that we've got. And I think, I mean, as a firm, we've demonstrated that by qualifying one of our biggest foreign clients in our, like, I mean, in our stable fort, which is ESCOM. I mean, as a result of a non-compliance with the PFMA and the completeness of the irregular expenditure. To get back to the issue of the NEN, I mean, the long and short of it, yes, there's quality control process, and I can categorically state and admit and say our engagement director erred by issuing out that report where there was no reference to the irregular expenditure. That, I mean, it did happen. He erred because it wasn't supposed to go out without that one. So that's the long and short of it. And then as to whether what happens afterwards, we engage with the executives, because at the AGM, we were instructed as auditors and says, go and engage an executive and resolve the matter. We engaged up to a point where, I mean, it wasn't really taking us forward, and there was nothing that was on towards. But what my last conversation which I had with the CFO was, I'm not going to allow a technically incorrect audit report to go out in the name of FNG. So we're going to be reissuing the new audit report. That's the long and short of it.
No, we need to close. You are not aware, Mr. There's a series of contradictions in what you're saying. That's why let's abide by the process. We want AG to brief us on the process of receiving your report and all the circumstances of that reception. And to a point where AG said to you, all the relevant records, to a point where AG said to you, correct it, you will have to make your own case with regard to that. Because we want to correct something, right? There's a lot of contradictions in your final response, you may not be aware, but the records now will assist us to deal with it. Because we don't want to be unfair to you. Can we leave it at that point? Thank you very much. AG, let me say thank you very much. And I must say, by the way, we are not as horrible as people might think we are. I want to say the format of your reporting has been very, very, very useful. It educates a layman like myself to be able to raise sensible questions based on what you have presented. Thank you very much. Can we have 5 minutes and then the department comes in? Thank you.
Members, can the department just hold it there? Honourable members, there is we had an oversight on a question we thought it's material, which has got a bearing on how we deal with the department's annual report, which. And I want Honourable Gordon to repeat that question again. And that's the only question, and then we close. Honourable Gordon.
Thank you. I should complain that you didn't respond to my question. So I started by talking about the role of auditors, which we talked about again. Secondly, I indicated two things in the annual report. One is, if you like, the mission of the department. If you take the Director General's contribution in the annual report, which talks about the operational environment, and thirdly, page 16, where reference is made to corruption and risk management. And in that context, I asked the auditors, not just the AG, how do you take account of the unchallenged allegations and facts that have emerged